Confluence Radio is a production of Confluence, a community-supported nonprofit that connects people to the history, living cultures, and ecology of the Columbia River system. Find us at confluenceproject.org.
Hello, and welcome to Confluence, Indigenous Voices of the Columbia River. Today, you are hearing a different voice than you normally do. The voice you are used to hearing, former Confluence Executive Director Colin Fogarty, has transitioned to a new role at the Oregon Community Foundation. I'm Mary Rose Navarro, the interim executive director at Confluence. After years of tree planting, stream restoration, policy advocacy, and influencing investments in thriving communities through investments in nature, I still seek to deepen my connections to the land and Indigenous peoples of Oregon and Washington. That's what drew me to Confluence and Stephanie Craig's weaving workshops this past December and January. Over the next few months, you'll hear from a different staff member every episode and get a brief glimpse into their areas of programming. The board is going through a thoughtful and deliberate effort to recruit and hire the next executive director. That lucky person will step into an organization with a dedicated staff, a talented board, strong business practices, stable funding, and deep community relationships. Thanks to Colin's 10 years of leadership, the next executive director will be well-positioned to continue elevating Indigenous voices to help people connect to the history, living culture, and ecology of the Columbia River, and understand what it means to tend to our home. Tending to place and deepening our understanding of its history is part of today's program. For several years now, Confluence has been gathering oral history interviews on an event known as the Red Heart Memorial. It's an annual commemoration in Vancouver, Washington, of something that happened in 1877. From June to October of 1877, the U.S. Cavalry waged a brutal war against the Nimiipuu people, or the Nez Perce tribe, in the place we now call Idaho. Chief Red Heart and his band were not involved in that war. Even so, the U.S. Army took him prisoner, along with the men, women, and children under his protection.
To project the term pacifist on a chief that was just leaning into the old ways of being, the old ways of doing, the old ways of living, isn't necessarily being a pacifist, but being ungovernable by this system that was being violently implemented within our communities. I don't necessarily see it as pacifism as much as I see it as a deliberate act of political defiance. And that's wildly inspirational to me. And if he were a non-warring chief, I haven't heard enough stories about whether he was or not. The fact that he stood on his convictions to protect our family and our old ways of being is enough for me to know that that is defiance and disobedience and dissent in a way that I'm happy to emulate in my life as a community organizer and as an activist.
That was Ty Simpson, a descendant of Chief Red Heart and an activist. Her family and the Red Heart Band were held at Fort Vancouver along the Columbia River, where they were treated harshly.
The Red Heart Band during the war between the U.S. Army and Chief Joseph, the Red Heart Band, a number of older people and young people were trying to get to the reservation and not be involved in the war. And they were captured by the U.S. Army and they were brought back to Vancouver. They were put in some kind of a barricade down below on the reserve here. And they were actually paraded, I think, in front of the public on a couple of occasions. And in fact, a baby Nez Perce boy died here that we do know of.
That was former Vancouver Mayor Royce Pollard. This story might have remained hidden and forgotten, but in 1998, Nez Perce leaders came back to Vancouver for a memorial that includes singing, speeches, a drum circle, and the recognition of U.S. military veterans. The Nez Perce tribe hosts this gathering in cooperation with the City of Vancouver and the National Park Service. It is an example of memory making and how that memory making changes over time and over generations. Today, we'll hear from Nez Perce tribal members Jeffrey Scott, Glendon Allen, Dana Wilson, Pete Wilson, Jamie Pinkham, Ty Simpson, and Wilford Scott. We'll also hear from Mary Wood. Here's how Jamie Pinkham describes how important it is to remember what happened in 1877. He's the former head of the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, a Nez Perce tribal member, and a descendant of Chief Joseph.
These stories, in many ways, when I think about how much our tribe is invested in telling our own story. You know, we've been studied and people have written books about us, but this really gives us an opportunity to explain our side of the story. The treatment of the Nez Perce and the fact that the government didn't protect the interests of the tribes in It was easy to do abuses against the Indians and not hold the settlers accountable for those abuses. And that contributed to the tension.
The Red Heart Memorial has been led by a Nimiipuu elder named Wilford Scott, or as everyone calls him, Scotty. Listen to Scotty recalls the beginning of the memorial.
Went to Vancouver to... at the request of the mayor, that was Royce Paul at the time.
You could feel the tension in the room. A number of people said, why, why would we want to come to Vancouver? You held our relatives prisoners there.
I told them, well, we'll go, but we'll, for one reason, we'll do a memorial. Every time we do these memorials, one of the first thing I tell the people, I tell them why we're here sometimes. And I say, today we come, we return here, and I tell them why, and I give them a little history of what happened there way back when. But I tell them we're not here to ask anybody to come up and say they're sorry. We're not here seeking forgiveness from anybody. We're here to honor those that were here 139 years ago, or whenever the time may be. And that's the way we start and the way we open things up. When we go to Vancouver, and I've started, even before we start the memorials, I ask the people, all the Nez Perce, to come out. And we just get in a little circle, not any bigger than this here. There may be 10 of us, maybe 15, maybe 20, and I try to get them real tight. And I tell them, I says, today we come here to honor our ancestors. Let's do it in a good way. Let's don't hurt anybody's feelings. Let's don't say something that's going to come back on us, say something that we're going to be sorry for. If somebody attacks or says something negative, don't respond to it. Just remember why we're here. I'll tell them, when we honor them, we honor ourselves. And I remind the people that. So we went over and we'd done the first memorial, and I went through all the books and got everything I could on Red Heart. And I got the list of the names of all those that were there that was published. And then there had a little two-year-old boy, and he was identified as the son of Little Bear, who died while they were there and is buried someplace there. Nobody knows where. So we took a little chair and a little folding chair for kids, and I got a big stuffed teddy bear. So I put the chair out there, and I put the bear in it. Let's set the bear in it. And so we'd done all our preliminaries and everything, and we was getting ready to do the pipe ceremony. And so anyway, I said, if there's anybody, a visitor, anybody from this area, from Vancouver, that has a two-year-old or younger, a boy, would you please come forward, please?
In the audience that day was a University of Oregon law professor, Mary Wood. Here, Mary talks a bit about her connection to the ceremony.
Well, my family goes way back with the Nez Perce because my great-grandfather, C.E.S. Wood, was aide-de-camp to General Howard in the Nez Perce War of 1877. And he objected to what the army was doing, chasing the Nez Perce people. And he resigned from the army after the war ended. He had become friends with Chief Joseph, even when the two sides were at battle, because as aide-de-camp, he was the person who was often sent by General Howard to deal with Chief Joseph and to talk to Chief Joseph. He actually took down Chief Joseph's surrender speech at the Bear Paw battlefield, and that was a significant occurrence in his life. So after he resigned from the army, he became a lawyer and settled in Portland. Chief Joseph and his band were ultimately sent and exiled to the Colville Indian Reservation up in Washington. But Chief Joseph would make many trips to Portland to do business in Portland, specifically with the BIA, the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And on these trips, my great-grandfather would have what we call a welcome dinner for Chief Joseph and his people who were with him. And my family would open their home and have these elaborate dinners that my great-grandmother would spend days preparing for Chief Joseph. And on one of those dinners, Chief Joseph looked at my great-grandfather, and he pointed to my grandfather, who was about 12 years old at the time, and he said, "Will you send your son up to live with me at the Colville Indian Reservation?" And my great-grandfather said, "Yes." And so my grandfather, as a boy of 12 years old, went up by himself, by boat, all the way up to the Colville Indian Reservation. Chief Joseph met him on horseback, and he spent a long season there living in Chief Joseph's teepee with his family, and then went back home and came back the next season as well and spent another long season hunting, fishing, living as one of Joseph's family in the teepee. And so our family's connections with the Nez Perce literally go back generations. And this was a friendship that was born in a military conflict, and yet it has become strengthened immeasurably so by the passage of time.
We sat there and waited, nobody, nothing. And so I announced again, and I said, "Is there anybody, even if it's just a baby, anybody with a little boy, would you please come up?"
And I looked around and I looked around, and I was the only one who was holding a small baby boy in my arms. And so I walked up to Scotty, who I didn't know at the time, and he said, "What is this boy's name?" And I said, "His name is C.E.S. Wood."
And I just, everything just went through me. I mean, my heart just, I can feel it in there. I knew the story after doing all these memorials other places for 20 some years prior to that. So I knew the ties. So anyway, we wanted to honor the little boy that was buried someplace there. We wanted her little boy to have that teddy bear in that chair. So she took them and she came up, and then she told who she was. She identified herself and her family. And her grandfather was the one that went to live with Chief Joseph for a couple of summers. And so now that's become a annual. We take our chair over, we'll have somebody come up and get it, and take the chair, and she'll always recognize somebody from the band with a little blanket or something. But the Woods family, because of that, have become part of our family, part of our band, and we have a lot of respect for them. These things have a lot of meaning. They have a lot of meaning.
You know, we're healing ourselves every time that we acquire land. And just recently, the land the tribe acquired outside of Joseph, Oregon, and the wildlife mitigation lands we acquired back in the mid-1990s, we see the healing through the tribe's efforts on salmon restoration, whether that is exerting their scientific capacity, their legal capacity, or their political capacity. And that's a sense of healing. And it's about reclaiming our rightful place. And I don't mean just physically on the landscape, but our rightful place spiritually, in terms of our ability as co-managers of the resource and as decision makers. And I feel that's a part of this broader healing that is taking place, especially with the leadership of the Nez Perce tribe. You know, sometimes I heard from a friend of mine, he's non-Nez Perce, but he said, you know, how can we heal the land until we've learned to heal ourselves? And we see this great healing, especially recovering from the challenges of the War of 1877. And you look at how we are springboarding into just one of the most comprehensive natural resource salmon restoration programs this country has ever seen. You know, our combined forces with the other treaty tribes in the Columbia Basin, as well as the other tribes, is that, to me, that's also part of the healing that is taking place. And so again, this cycle of generations that are stepping forward to keep this event going and keep the memory alive has just been amazing.
Today, the ceremony continues. To end the podcast, we'll hear from three Nez Perce tribal members on what the ceremony means to them, and also how they'd like to see the meaning evolve.
My name is Danae Wilson. My mother is the late Geneva Green Towner, and her mother was Lucy McFarland. Lucy, my grandma Lucy, was married twice. Her first husband passed away. He was Red Heart. So my mother's oldest siblings are Red Hearts. Jesse Red Heart, Catherine Red Heart, Tom Red Heart. My mother's the youngest child. My grandma's second husband was Green, and they had three children. My mom is the youngest of the next set of children. So it was extremely important for my mother to be involved because those are her siblings. That's her family. And so while my mom is a Green and not a Red Heart, I'm a Green and not a Red Heart. They are my family. And I think of them no differently than I do my own sisters, than my own brothers. And so so for us, there's no difference between them and us because we were raised that way. My mother used to say, either you are or you're not. There's no middle ground. There's no half. There's no part. We're the same. We're the same blood. So Nez Perces who live in Oregon and in Washington, who are far from home, they can come there and enjoy conversations and time with relatives. And so for me, it's a reunion going back to the Red Heart Memorial. It's a reunion of our people, and it brings many of us together who we don't normally see all the time. And it's warming to be able to sit down and have a conversation and a cup of coffee with family and friends who there's an excitement, a buildup to being, we know they're going to be there. We know we're going to see them, and we know we'll have a time to visit. There's a difference today than there was for me and my generation, my son and my granddaughter. It holds a different meaning to us now. Yes, that is still there. Yes, that's why we go there, and that's why it's important to us, because we were interned there. But it doesn't mean that has to stay sorrowful. We can turn that pain and hurt into something beautiful. And I think Nez Perce people have done that very well. I have no doubt that my granddaughter will be able to teach her children, and they'll be able to teach their children how important this place is to us and what it meant, and how we will be able to continue making friendships and ties all throughout our next generations, because it's that important to us to still go and to still teach and to still participate.
My name is Clendon T. Allen II, and I live in Peshawar, Washington, and I'm Nez Perce. My dad's name is Kenneth John Allen, and my mother is Magdalene Johnson, maiden name. But she's Magdalene Allen, and my dad was Cayuse, and my mom was Colville. And I'm originally from my Titoka Timki's Oimitatats, means many wounds. It's a man that was part of the Nez Perce's leaving the Gwynoder Lolo Pass. He's buried there. And I took on my dad's uncle and my dad's dad gave me that name, Oimitatats. And I try to live up to that name. You know, their family used to be, a lot of them used to be the elders, but now it kind of, their family kind of dwindled down. Now the kids are stepping up to fill those spots of the elders that are gone, to keep the lineage going and the acknowledgement of their uncles and aunts, grandmas and grandpas. Some of them are drummers, some of them are bee workers, some of them are horse riders. Some of them are like storytellers. And so they have all the gifts, you know, that was handed down to them from their elders and their mom and dads. And which is good because it keeps the spirit alive for them, Red Heart family.
That's maybe in a lucky woman. He was named Poo when he just go at Kaseapotemp Maurice, Kaseapotemp Pistol Pete. What it is told you is good morning, my friends. My Nez Perce name is he just go at. It translates into one who pours the water because I use a sweat house on a daily basis. That's where my name originally comes from. And I told you my given name by my mom and dad is Maurice, but what a lot of people know me by, and not just through Indian country, but throughout the world, people know me as Pistol Pete from when I worked at the Nez Perce National Historical Park. So from my mother's side, I come from Red Heart, Chief Red Heart, which we know in Nez Perce languages, Temena Il Fil. That's Red Heart. And then from my dad's side, I come from the Chief Joseph band. But yeah, when the Red Heart Memorial actually started, it was significant to me. And I always told my siblings how important it was for us to make it down there to that, because that's from our mother's side of the family. We actually had our family, when we had actually had the horse parade, they were all Red Heart members that was riding the horses. And they was actually leading a couple horses that were riderless, because we do that at every ceremony, have riderless horses, and that's for the people that we've left along the Nez Perce Trail.
Tats lahein inim winitwa satit watit, soyapa winitwas Ty Simpson, inim nixasa hewis timina ilp ilp kanich, the loitsa kina. I told you in Nimiputimt, or the language of the Nez Perce Nation, that my name is the storyteller. And in English, I'm called Ty Simpson. I also told you that I'm a descendant of Chief Red Heart of the Nez Perce Nation as well. So not only am I a descendant of Chief Red Heart, I'm a descendant of incredibly powerful and dynamic matriarchs of the Red Heart Band. And I'm so very thankful for that history. Our ties to Nimiipuu country and Nimiipuu land are, 15,000 years old. So to know who I am going back several generations is both privilege and an honor, and something that I hold very sacred and dear in my life. What does it look like to memorialize Timina Ilp Ilp in a contemporary sense, right? We come together every year for the memorial to retell the historical truths. But how do we honor who Timina Ilp Ilp is in a contemporary sense? Who's going to give us land back, right? Again, that's radical activist Ty speaking there. Is there a scholarship fund for the descendants of Timina Ilp Ilp to attend college for free anywhere in our ancestral territory, right? Those folks who are descendants of the soldiers in the cavalry, right? Are they making an attempt in a contemporary way to offer reparations to descendants of Timina Ilp Ilp? There's a million ways that that can show up and manifest and be embodied and look. And I don't think that anybody stopped to consider it. What happens is we romanticize history in such a way that that's where we want to stay because it feels good. It gives us warm fuzzies. It's this story of friendship and reconciliation. And we love that, but it does not admonish the responsibility of forced dispossession, displacement, marginalization, dehumanization, all of those things. Like, nobody is admonished from those things. And so what does it mean to really look at taking responsibility to repair the harm that has been caused against Timina Ilp Ilp in a historical sense? And then the far-reaching effects of that harm in a contemporary setting, when he has a vast family. We're a big family. We're a big band of the nation. I also believe that reconciliation and healing will have to come from us. We determine what that looks and feels like.
Confluence, Indigenous Voices of the Columbia River, is produced by Lily Hart and Gretchen Kilby. Oral history interviews were conducted by our program manager, Courtney Yilk. To find out more about Confluence, check out our website, confluenceproject.org. You'll find information about our 5 completed sites along the Columbia River system in collaboration with Northwest Tribes and the celebrated artist, Maya Lin. You can also find a series of interviews, documentaries, podcasts, photo galleries, and articles about the history, Indigenous cultures, and ecology of the Columbia River system. Remember, Confluence is a community-supported nonprofit. We can only do this work because of the generous support from the Friends of Confluence. That's you. Join us today at confluenceproject.org. Thanks for listening to Confluence.